This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, October the 2nd, 2015. And a very warm welcome to you for this week's edition of the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. The extracts we will be reading for you from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Ros and Peter Lydiard. Got a couple of regular notices for you. If you have any problems with your recording, do please call Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And also a reminder here that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. If you know of anyone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, Irene will help you with that also. Just give her a call and she'll make the necessary arrangements. Her number again is 01962 870 370. And another reminder for those of you with computers or tablets. As well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. And as you know, that's all lowercase, no spaces, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, most recent first on the list. And so to this week's edition of the Chronicle. Your readers today are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Robin Freeman.
Hello.
And we're very pleased to welcome Peter Lydiard this week, as Jerry is away on holiday.
Hello.
And I'm Ros Lydiard, your presenter. No relation. Now, the main headlines this week are calls for answers, facelift at Brooks, vigil held for sports enthusiast. And we'll have that first headline story. Claire, please.
Calls for answers. Answers are being demanded of health chiefs after plans for a new, £150 million hospital near Winchester were halted due to a lack of money. Proposals to build a centralised emergency unit by Junction 7 of the M3 were thrown into serious doubt when funding boards revealed a £60 million affordability gap. Divisions have emerged between Hampshire Hospitals Trust and the clinical commissioning groups which fund it over how much money can be spent on critical care at a time when cash-strapped NHS bosses want to prioritise community services. The critical treatment unit, a cornerstone of the Trust's vision yet to be scrapped entirely, would treat the 15% of sickest patients with 24-hour consultant care and include an £18.5 million cancer unit. Trust Chairman Elizabeth Padmore defended the scheme at a meeting in Basingstoke last week, telling directors it fits perfectly with NHS plans. But North Hampshire CCG raised concerns that the Trust only consulted on their preferred project at an exhibition last year. Anne Phillips, who sits on the NHCCG governing body, said health funding is very fast moving. She said, "We don't feel, the CCGs, that the public were engaged with delivering a whole series of options. We're not talking about less money being available for the 15%, we're talking about less money for the 100%, so we're talking about putting more into community care." In a letter to stakeholders, the West and North Hampshire CCGs have recommended a comprehensive revamp of health and social care. They said it was still possible the proposed hospital might emerge as part of that redesign. Steve Brine, MP, Health Secretary Jeremy Hunt's right-hand man in Parliament, said, "A whole system approach that is able to fully combine hospital with social care must be right, because it's increasingly clear across the NHS that the success of one is heavily reliant on the other." Mr. Brine added, "I don't think grandstanding on this issue is going to help anyone." Winchester City and County Councillor Martin Todd, who sits on a County Council committee scrutinising the plans, said, "The bit I've always asked about, and where they've never really had answers, is the finances. That's the bit where they've always said, 'It's very difficult, we'll come back to you.'" He estimated hundreds of thousands of pounds have been spent already. The Trust said it was unable to provide costs of the scheme to date. Mary Edwards, Chief Executive of Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, which runs the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, said it was disappointed the consultation was not going ahead. West Hampshire CCG declined to comment ahead of a board meeting in Hedge End near Eastleigh yesterday.
Facelift at Brooks. The Brooks Shopping Centre in Winchester is set for refurbishment after a multi-million pound takeover. New owner Catalyst Capital has promised to completely revitalise the complex and attract new retailers to the city. The real estate firm announced its plans last week after a £55 million takeover of the property empire previously owned by the DiStefano Property Group, which collapsed last year. The Brooks, home to shops including Primark and BHS, but rarely fully let since its launch in the early 90s, is considered a crown jewel of the 19-strong portfolio. Ilan Goldman, European Director of Catalyst Capital, said, "We are delighted to become the new owner of the Brooks and are looking forward to showing the city what we have planned. Our proposed investment into the scheme will attract new retailers, which will complement the existing offer, thereby re-establishing it as a key retail destination in Winchester. This will enable it to benefit from other local developments in the city," added Mr. Goldman. Liz Marsden, centre manager, said, "This fantastic news gives shoppers the opportunity to rediscover just what the Brooks has to offer. We are keen to get started and work closely with the Catalyst team to transform the centre into a place that the local community and visitors to the area will enjoy. This is a very exciting time, and we look forward to welcoming new retailers into the centre." TH Real Estate, the firm behind the neighbouring Silver Hill scheme, had considered purchasing and demolishing the Brooks if the likely buyer intended to take it down market. The area would have been integrated into Silver Hill to protect the prestige of its high-end tenants, Development Director Martin Perry said in January. City Councillor Steve Miller, portfolio holder for estates, said, "The future of the centre will be much more secure now that the management are proposing to carry out a refurbishment, which it is anticipated will help improve the environment for both retailers and shoppers. It is hoped that under new management, the centre will attract additional retailers to complement the existing shops and enhance the retail offer in the city for residents and tourists alike." 12 other firms bid for what was branded the Regatta portfolio earlier this year, according to reports by real estate data firm CoStar. The package includes 19 mixed-use sites across London and the South East. The deal does not include the proposed Morrison Superstore site at East Street in Southampton City Centre.
Vigil held for sports enthusiast. A well-known Oresford resident, Malcolm Miles, has died suddenly in France whilst on holiday. The cremation took place in Angoulême in September the 10th, and at the same time a vigil was held at Alresford Methodist Church for neighbours and friends. A service of thanksgiving will be held in St John's Church, Alresford, on Saturday, October the 10th at 3 p.m. Malcolm, 79, became Hampshire Recreation Officer in 1973, believing passionately in sport for all. He ensured the county played a vital role in developing Royal Victoria Country Park on the site of the former military hospital. After retirement, Malcolm worked for Hampshire Playing Fields Association, working tirelessly to protect and promote open spaces for sports and recreation. Malcolm had a huge passion for rugby. Over two decades, he was fully involved in Hampshire rugby, managing the under-21 and under-23 teams. Malcolm's wife Florence, the mother of his daughters Debbie and Louise, died in 1994, and his partner Annie Tears has shared his life for the last 20 years, first living in Alresford and then Cheriton. Malcolm was a founder member of the Alresford Rotary and was president three times, always on hand at the annual firework display or selling Christmas trees in Broad Street. A steward, and latterly senior steward at Alresford Methodist Church, he became a town trustee in 2013, becoming deputy chairman. He was a regular face at the Thursday market in Broad Street, collecting rents and chatting to stallholders. Malcolm died while on holiday with his partner Annie and friends.
Thank you all for those headlines. And we'll give you the death announcements now, and they'll be followed by Claire with Christian comment. Beryl. Dorothy Beryl, aged 92 years, peacefully on the 19th of September.
Eads, Leonard Eads, in his sleep on 27th September, aged 99.
Fuller. Mary Maria Ann Fuller, in hospital, 12th September, aged 79.
Merrickin, Edward Merrickin, peacefully at home on the 26th of September, aged 80.
Smith, Cyril Ernest Slim Smith, on the 19th of September, 2015, aged 88.
Taggart, Roger John Taggart, on 23rd September, aged 60.
Webb, Christopher John Webb, on the 25th of September, in hospital, aged 76.
Wilkinson, Virginia Mary, née Broom, of Bath, formerly of Winchester, peacefully in her sleep at home.
Thank you very much. And Claire, on to Christian comment, and this week's contributor is the Reverend Paul Kennedy. Thank you.
And he has entitled this, Why Unreasonable Faith Fails to Die. Jesus said, if your hand causes you to stumble, cut it off. If your foot causes you to stumble, cut it off. If your eye causes you to stumble, tear it out. Are these the words of a reasonable man? Jesus is disturbing us with words that are both nonsensical and disgusting. Yes, Jesus' words are disgusting when they encourage self-mutilation. So where does that leave us who follow the disturbing prophet from Nazareth? We should not write off these challenging words, as some do, by saying Jesus is engaging a clever literary device, mere hyperbole which we can ignore in the enlightened 21st century. Take these words seriously in the same way we might take a disturbing dream seriously in a counselling session. A drum can reveal something fundamental about ourselves. A dream, I beg your pardon. Perhaps a trauma, disappointment, or bereavement with which we have not engaged, but which remains brooding in our subconscious. If we engage with the trauma revealed in the dream, we will be challenged, but this can lead to greater self-awareness and acceptance. Jesus is not reasonable in just the same way that humankind is not reasonable. There is no reasonable test as to why we fall in love with one person and not another. the supporting of one team over another is not a reasonable choice, and so can't be changed following a string of bad results. We are not reasonable, much to the frustration of the scientist Richard Dawkins, who fails to understand why an unreasonable faith fails to die out in modern humanity. The Bible, our sacred text, is also unreasonable because it's the human story of engaging with meaning and purpose. The text includes erotica, the Song of Songs, poetry, the Psalms, warfare, the story of the Exodus, the experience of those who followed Jesus, the Gospels, and an attempt to live out that experience, the letters. Jesus' life includes the unreasonable, not just his words, but a virgin birth, miracles, and resurrection, along with the horrifically mundane execution by an occupying state. It's not a matter of accepting or rejecting the unreasonable, but a matter of engaging with what this is saying about our humanity. Perhaps acknowledging our propensity to violence, especially against the outsider, while at the same time striving with our ideals of welcoming the stranger. The Church, like our text and founder, is also unreasonable. There is no reason why the head of a tiny state with a minuscule electoral base can address the US Congress and move thousands to tears, but this is what Pope Francis did in America. In his letter to the church at Philippi, Paul says, "Work out your own salvation with fear and trembling." This fear and trembling was experienced by the psalmist as he composed the angst-ridden Psalm 55. By Abraham, as he understood a call to offer his son Isaac in sacrifice, and by Jesus, as he contemplated the cross. Faith encourages us to engage with fear and trembling and not to suppress it. Faith also offers us the hope of resurrection beyond this painful engagement. And that was written by the Reverend Paul Kennedy.
Thank you very much, Claire. Now we're on to letters to the editor. We have 9 letters today, and the leading topic, of course, is Silver Hill. Now, Robin, will you start us off with the first letter, please?
Culture of secrecy excludes public. Sir, the letter of the City Council's guiding principle that if you want to keep a secret, you don't tell anyone you've got it, is outrageous. The Chronicle, September the 24th. The danger when suppressing information is that it begs questions about how many other secrets there are and why they are secret. Is the council ashamed of its actions? Does Councillor Godfrey's modus operandi explain why the council feels the need for such a remarkable number of exempt sessions? Aligned with the culture of secrecy and subterfuge is the council's woeful lack of public consultation in so many crucial areas. On the front page of last week's Chronicle, relating to the development of station approach, Corporate Director Steve Tilbury is quoted as saying, "It's better to know everything, but almost nobody starts from that position." Yet again, residents' views seem to be excluded from the debate. Is it time for more falling on swords? Eunice Stevens, Cliffway, Compton. And the letter is illustrated by a model of Silver Hill, showing the detail.
Now, the second letter on the same subject, of course, is from Councillor Kim Gottlieb. It's headed, "The Same Old Scheme. Sir, probably the silliest thing I've heard regarding Silver Hill, and I've heard many, is the one implied by the leader of the City Council last week that the current scheme is the result of the Council responding to those who marched on the Guildhall last November. At the time, the 2,000 valiant marchers were dismissed by the Council as a NIMBY rabble. They were then ignored by the planning committee, which, 2 weeks later, approved the 2014 scheme, which omitted the bus station and the affordable housing, which were, amongst several other reasons, what prompted the biggest protest in Winchester for many a year. The 2014 scheme is not going ahead, but only because in February the High Court judged the council's action to be unlawful and in serious breach of the procurement regulations. Instead of responding positively to the judgment, saying sorry, and then taking the opportunity it had to go out to the market and to procure the development properly, the council has allowed the developer to revert to the 2009 scheme. The council and the developer had previously declared that the scheme was unviable, but hey presto, it became viable almost overnight, and now it's being feted as a new scheme. It is, of course, nothing of the sort. What is proposed now was conceived more than 10 years ago, before the recession and the internet retailing revolution. It is even less attractive than the 2014 scheme, which is part of the reason the council spent 12 months in 2013-14 trying to improve its looks. The developer has already mooted that changes will be sought, so the idea that the bus station and affordable housing will survive intact is, I respectfully suggest, a bit silly. That's from Councillor Kim Gottlieb, City Councillor for the Itchen Valley.
And another one. Silver Hill Fears. Sir, I'm grateful for your coverage of the decision by the Information Commissioner to my Freedom of Information request for the viability assessment on Silver Hill, Chronicle September the 24th. Councillor Godfrey's response, if you want to keep something a secret, you don't tell anyone you've got it, is refreshingly frank. I made the request because I couldn't understand how a scheme that was viable in 2012, when the council and the developers obtained the compulsory purchase order, should become unviable 2 years later, when property prices in Winchester had risen inexorably. In fact, the Commissioner's report understates this rise, as it says that average house prices are over £350,000. This figure seems to have been taken from the council's own website. According to the estate agent's material that comes through my letterbox, the average price of a home in and around Winchester in 2013 was £592,000. This month's version of the same material says that in the year to June 2015, house prices in Winchester rose by 13.6%, compared with just 2.8% in surrounding villages. These figures come from the Land Registry. This is why I find it extraordinary that the Silver Hill developers can say they risk being unable to make their legitimate profit if they are made to fulfil their obligation on affordable housing. The Commissioner notes there has been controversy over the architectural merits of the scheme, which will have major impact on a historic city centre. He also mentions the lack of a competitive tender, saying it adds weight to the public interest in disclosing information which would allow the public to understand whether the council had dealt with the proposals competently. The Commissioner also notes that the fact that the 2014 scheme was later abandoned is not a relevant factor. Some of us fear the developers will again try to find a way out of that obligation once the scheme is underway. The Commissioner's decision might help prevent that. And that letter was written by Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
This letter is from Karen McCleary of Kingsworthy, with the heading Democracy Fails. Last Thursday at Winchester City Council's Planning Committee meeting, I witnessed the demise of local democracy. city councillors, by a 5-4 majority vote, ignored the wishes of the residents of Kingsworthy and the advice of the parish council and railroaded through the Drew Smith plan to put 25 social housing homes on Top Field. Clear, objective and well-presented arguments were put forward by the parish council. Jane Rutter, the local city councillor and a local resident, highlighting the reasons why Top Field is unsuitable for housing, including flood risk, traffic congestion, inaccessibility, poor vehicular access and the ruination of green open space. These arguments have all been accepted in the past. Three previous applications have failed, and rightly so. Now, however, it seems that although the site was not deemed suitable for marketable housing, it is perfectly acceptable to throw up social housing on an isolated field away from local amenities, thus going against all the principles and properly integrating social housing into the community. The Tory chairman of the committee, Mr. Ruffle, voted in favour of the planning application, saying, "We need social housing and we need it quickly." That may well be the case, but there are other sites in the village identified by the parish council which would be more suitable, more convenient to live in, less environmentally damaging and less contentious than Top Field. Rather than arrogantly ignoring the suggestion put forward by the parish councillor to investigate the possibility of these sites, the city council should have paused to listen to the views and ideas of the people who live in the area and respect local wishes. Throwing up social housing on the end of a baited hook offered by a developer desperate to make a profit is dreadful politics and appalling social planning. Shame on the councillors who voted for this application. I doubt if the good folk at Kingsworthy will ever trust their local politicians again. Karen McCleary, Hook Pit Farm Lane, Kingsworthy.
Catherine Morris writes, "Facility, a must. Sir, Winchester City Council is right to support a new sports and leisure facility at Bar End. The current facilities at River Park cannot meet the needs of our growing population and remains difficult to access for most people. A 50-metre pool that can be divided is essential to enable different users access to the pool at the same time, and this will offer far greater financial returns. The council must consider the needs of all Winchester and district residents. Unlike River Park, the Bar End location is much easier to access by bus, road, cycle, and is an equidistant walk from the bus station. The parkland will remain and continue to be enjoyed by Winchester residents, but the community sports and leisure facilities must move to Bar End. This will ensure sport for all, enhance the health of our community and reduce traffic in central Winchester." That was written by Catherine Morris, Carmans Lane, Compton.
This letter from Malcolm Jerry is headed "Unwanted Work." "Many thanks for publishing my recent letter regarding the Ladycroft Ford near Alsford. I believe that as a result of this, no less than 3 representatives of Hampshire County Council turned up on Tuesday last week to reassess the completion of this overdue project. When I asked why it was still not finished, I was informed that the concrete blocks had to settle before the missing graded stones are put down, which is not correct. The man in charge of the project had left, hope he had no other incomplete jobs, and finally the original stones that had been especially brought in and then removed were the wrong sort. At last it looks like this upgrade, which has taken 2.5 years at a reputed cost of £500,000, will finally be completed. I would point out that locally nobody wanted it done, and I'm sure the people of Alsford would have preferred the money to be spent repairing the potholes on their roads. Only this week, a large articulated lorry had to reverse 0.5 mile down the lane back to the main road. There is nowhere for a lorry to turn round on the road to the ford, which took 25 minutes. As already mentioned, the road to the ford is hopelessly inadequate for the amount of traffic now using it. But I really feel that at the very least, a restriction should be put in place as to the size and weight of vehicles that are permitted to use it, as there's going to be an accident in the near future. Malcolm Jerry, Shepherdstown, Oxford.
This letter from Dave Adams of Tegdown Meads is headed Pleas for Service. As parents at Week Primary School campaigning for the return of our Lollipop School Crossing, SCP, we were pleased to be featured in the Chronicle for a second successive week on September the 24th. However, we must point out a mistake in your second story. We are campaigning for the reinstatement of the SCP service at the school's Stony Lane site, not for the reinstatement of our much-loved former Lollipop man, Robin, who we hope is now enjoying a well-deserved retirement. We would also suggest the County Council reviews its current policy not to replace SCP personnel who retire or resign when working on so-called controlled crossings. The site at Week is on a zebra crossing, with no consideration of the individual circumstances at each site. Initially, HCC refused to conduct a new traffic survey on Stony Lane to establish whether there is a need for the SCP, ignoring a 2011 survey that showed there was. We are delighted that HCC has now agreed to a new survey. HCC is right to be proud of the large number of SCPs working across Hampshire and should not be looking for ways to remove these services as a cost-cutting measure. Lollipop men and women perform a vital role protecting children from injury or death for a modest wage. Removing them from sites where they are needed hugely increases the chances of a child being struck by a vehicle. We understand that each SCP costs no more than £5,000 a year. If only all other items of County Council expenditure offered such good value for money. Dave Adams, Tegdown Meads, Winchester.
Paul Wing's letter is headed Balancing Books. Sir, Winchester Cathedral is probably the single best-known building in Winchester and is kept open every day of the year, attracting thousands of visitors every week. Indeed, it is probably the only cathedral to have had its name as the title of a number one hit in the pop charts. The cathedral's primary purpose is for prayer and worship, and there is no entry charge to do this, with at least three services every day. The cathedral needs £10,000 per day to stay open and function properly as a church. Tours are free, as are leaflets about the cathedral, which are in many languages. All entry tickets are valid for re-entry for 365 days, and concessions are available, with accompanied children under 16 gaining free access. There are also excellent children's trails and holiday activities. All friends and volunteers of the cathedral have free admission. I'm sure the dean and chapter of the cathedral would like to remove these entry charges, but could only do so once the cathedral finances would allow. It would be highly irresponsible not to be able to balance the books each year. Contrary to popular belief, there is no state subsidy for our great cathedrals, nor any central church funding. They have to survive on their own. If people still object to paying an entry fee, they could try coming to Choral Evensong, details of which are advertised each week in this paper, or attend a service on a Sunday. They might also consider joining the Friends, or attending a lunchtime concert on Tuesdays. All of these ensure free entry and everybody is most welcome. It's written by Paul Wing, Silchester Place, Hyde, Winchester.
This letter is headed Home's Dilemma from N.W. Hall. Sir, Councillor Stephen Godfrey states that whatever the number of refugees we are asked to support, it will have no noticeable effect on our normal services, Chronicle September 24th. With the high number of people on the housing waiting list, would he put my mind at rest by telling me where they will live? N.W. Hall, St. Catherine's View, Lower Chilcombe.
Thank you very much, everybody. And we're going to move on to your say now, when a Hampshire Chronicle roving reporter asks people of Winchester about whether they would like to live on Mars. They didn't ask me. Let's hear what they have to say, please, Claire.
Well, the official question is, water can flow across Mars, according to NASA scientists, which could pave the way for life. We asked, would you ever want to live on Mars? Chloe Bruce, who's 21, a civil servant from Hampshire County Council, from Abbots Barton, Winchester, said, I would not live on Mars, because what if you go there and you die? I think the water discovery is a very exciting find, but I would not risk going to Mars. Stephen Tomsett, 64, retired and volunteering at Oxfam Bookshop from Highcliffe, Winchester, said, no, it's not for me because it might be a bit lonely on Mars. Terry Shanahan, who's 63, ice cream seller of Hyde Street, Winchester, said, I wouldn't want to live on Mars. It's not for me. I don't even like getting on a plane, let alone a spacecraft. And Aaron White, who's 36, shop assistant of Thurmond Crescent, Stanmore, said, it's too far away for me, but I do not like living on Earth because it's too violent and boring. If Mars were closer and easier to get to, then maybe.
I don't suppose they'll be doing day trips to Mars, will they? Thank you very much, Claire. Now, if you have an opinion or a subject you would like to air on the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That number again, 01962 860 836, or you can email them on news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, all lowercase, no spaces, news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you can also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now, we're staying with the opinions of the public and also of the Hampshire Chronicle editor. An editorial comment this week is headed, Doubt Cast Over Plan to Build New Hospital. News that financial constraints have thrown into doubt plans for a new hospital north of Winchester is both a surprise and depressing. It was too early to say whether the case had been made for a third hospital in this area to, in theory, complement the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester and the North Hampshire in Basingstoke. The news is a surprise because the trust that runs the Royal Hampshire County Hospital has been making plans for several years, and depressing because it throws into confusion the strategy for healthcare in the medium and long term. Quite where we go from here is unclear. It is time for a full and open debate on how the local NHS should evolve. Peter now has Ron Allison's contribution to First Person, and it has the intriguing title, The Joy of Word and Yogi Berra.
Yes. I love words. When I fill in occupation on a form, I always put journalist. In truth, I would prefer to claim wordsmith, but that really would be a touch pretentious. So, journalist it is, and happily so, since, in my case anyway, it also covers author and broadcaster. Word. Defined in my dictionary as a single unit of language which has meaning and is used with others to form sentences. Well, that is one way of putting it. I think of a word as something I hear or see. It can be spoken or sung. It can be read in 100 different situations. In a book, a newspaper, on a billboard or advertisement, on a train ticket, on a chocolate bar, and so on. Words come at us from all angles and at all times. I would be genuinely be bereft if there were to be no more newspapers, as I would be should broadcasting come to an end. A daily newspaper is a joy, not all of them, and when it includes the challenge of word games like a crossword, well, sheer bliss. Yes, words can bring great pleasure. They can also be hurtful, spiteful, mean. Words need to be treated with care, thought about before they are used, apologised for if they're misdirected or misused. Yes, in my ideal word, in my ideal world, things should be, my ideal word used correctly, grammatically, if you like. No more we was, theirselves, them people, to quote only three phrases quite often heard on contemporary broadcasts, often connected with sport, sadly. So quite naturally and necessarily we attach great importance to what is said or written. Just think back, as parents or grandparents, that wonderful moment the baby has just said his or her first word. What was it? Well, Dadda, of course. Are you sure? Well, could have been Mama. Anyway, she spoke. And from then on, words, first spoken, later read, are how we progress. Some will grow to have delightful voices, which are a joy to hear. Those broadcasts we grew up with. Perhaps you are of the Blue Peter generations, or picked up a style from Radio 1. Diversity in speech is marvellous. Accents, dialects, different words in times. My grandparents were Geordies, so I was always the wee bairn. And after a holiday with them, my grandmother would say it had been quite nice. She meant sincerely that it had been a wonderful time. And if, while up in Newcastle, we were going to the cinema, she would ask what time was the commencement. No wonder I loved her. Thinking more generally, I suppose we appreciate words most when they are a comfort to us and when they make us laugh. Which brings me to the master of language, or, I suppose, a master of the mangler of words. Now, I'm not a follower of baseball, but I yield to no one in my appreciation of one of that game's great players, Yogi Berra, who died last week at the age of 90. Apparently, he was a truly special person on the pitch, yet his lasting memory will always be as a master of the malapropisms, misusing a word instead of a similar-sounding one, or talking apparent nonsense with just a touch of logic underpinning what he was saying. How wonderful to be remembered for this. Always go to other people's funerals, otherwise they won't go to yours. And when asked by his wife when he would be like to be buried, he responded by saying he didn't know and added, "Why don't you surprise me?" Yogi was a nickname, but he stuck with it and was the inspiration for the cartoon character Yogi Bear. And the yogiisms kept coming. The Times has been busy researching. It's like deja vu all over again. The future ain't what it used to be. And it ain't the heat, it's the humility. And finally, and helpfully, when you come to a fork in the road, take it.
Thank you, Peter. Now, I wonder what sort of words Belgarum and their alternative look at the news will use. We're on to Belgarum now, and we've got three items in their column. And the first has a title which really appeals. Mum set for close shave. Claire, with that first one, please.
An Alsford mum is giving up her hair to help fight the disease that claimed her daughter. Katie Gallien lost Olivia, aged just 2 years old, to cancer in 2007, after she was diagnosed with lymphoblastic leukemia when she was just 5 weeks old. Since then, Katie, a hairdresser, has raised funds to help find ways to beat the disease and keep alive the memories of her little girl. This evening, she will have her head shaved for charity at her salon in West Street. She said, "This is the shortest I will ever have had my hair. I was going to have it done last year, but I chickened out." Katie added, "No one is usually allowed to touch my hair, so for me to shave it off is a big thing." Katie of Kiln Lane, Old Alsford, has been raising funds in recent weeks during Childhood Cancer Awareness Month. So far, they have gathered £1,200 for PM Brown Ward at Southampton General Hospital, where Olivia was treated. Last year, Katie and the team at Alsford Hair Care, dressed in gold, sold gold ribbons, as well as cakes and a raffle, to raise £400 for Click Sergeant. The PM Brown unit has 10 beds and is the main treatment centre in Wessex for children with cancer, providing care 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, for children up to 16 years of age. And there's a picture of Katie with her team during fundraising last year.
Thank you. Now, Robin has an item which he's been very keen to read for us, and it's about graveyards.
OK. It's headed Graveyards Future. An interesting discussion on death and the future of Magdalen Hill Cemetery was heard at the Town Forum last Wednesday. The meeting heard that the cemetery generates revenue of £105,000 a year and has operating costs of £40,000. Councillor Dominic Hiscock raised the controversial question of whether existing plots would be reused. Steve Tilbury, corporate director, said that plots could only be purchased for 100 years. That means that some plots could potentially be reused as the cemetery opened in late 1914. Graves would be deepened and the previous burial lowered underneath. But the forum heard that there were difficulties because of the chalk rock. Mr. Tilbury added, "There is a great deal of public sensitivity about the idea of reburials. We are very limited about that because of public sensitivity and the general British way of doing things. In Europe and Japan, the dead are buried above ground in charnel houses. That would make life a lot easier. After all, we have multi-story car parks."
Oh, dear.
And the piece is illustrated by a couple of cemetery gates and with the heading, "A Foggy Cemetery in 2011.
Thank you very much. And it's quite interesting that they actually use the phrase, "to have burials above ground would make life a lot easier."
Not death. No. Right, this next piece from Bill Garham is headed, "Bad Venue for Fire Discussion." It is the biggest chance for the people of Winchester to make their voices heard over huge cuts to the city's fire service. Why, then, is a consultation being held in a suburban church which most residents will need a sat-nav to locate? Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service is bringing its feedback show to Level 10 Church on Stanmore Lane on October the 14th to invite public views on its proposed cuts to Winchester Fire Station. One option would see full-time firefighters halved from 28 to 14 with no overnight cover on site. The number of part-time, retained firefighters would increase from 12 to 14 both day and night. A second option would see full-timers halved from 28 with 2 full-timers on overnight. Retained numbers would drop from 12 to 10 both day and night. It means an average first response time increase of around 4.5 minutes. It is no small matter. Or perhaps in this age of austerity, the service balked at the cost of hiring one of the city centre's more suitable and recognisable venues.
And those are Bill Gorham's items for this week. I'm going to move on now to hysterical... I'm sorry. Historical items.
Really?
And Claire, could you give us 25 years, please?
25 years ago, September 28th, 1990. Ukraine visit. A warm-hearted welcome and remarkable generosity greeted British farmers visiting their Soviet counterparts in the Ukraine last week. The returning NFU delegation spoke of exceptional hospitality, kindness and understanding, despite significant contrasts with respect to the cultural, political and economical structure of the two countries, and notwithstanding striking differences in the standard of living.
And 50 years from Robin, please.
50 years ago, October the 2nd, 1965, and there are two items. The first is headed Hot Dog. A man enjoying a smoke with a friend is nothing unusual until the friend turns out to be a dog. This regularly happens at Odeon when Mr. Morris Stokes of the bungalow Pot Bridge lights up with his dog Buster. A crossbred Jack Russell Terrier, Buster will sit up on his haunches for minutes on end, hat on head, pipe in mouth, smoking wads of rolled-up paper. It took Mr. Stokes a year to train him to get used to fire. 65-year-old Mr. Stokes has been training dogs since he was 15. He had two other pipe-smoking dogs and another which rode a horse.
Oh dear.
The second item is headed New Road Needed. A new road running through Bushfield Camp, Winchester, and linking the Southampton Road to the Romsey Road is needed before development can go ahead at Badger Farm and Bushfield Camp. Mr. A.D.G. Smart, the county planning officer, told Hampshire County Council planning committee members at Winchester on Friday week that it was reasonable to conclude that the road was necessary, in view of the traffic difficulties that would arise if access from the site was allowed to Stanmore Lane or Oliver's Battery Road. When the application to develop the site was first received, they refused it as they wanted to defer development to 1970 because of access to Stanmore Lane and particularly because of the narrow tunnel under the railway line.
Thank you. And I can remember that. Peter, now with 100 years.
Yes. Can you remember that?
No. Not quite, no.
100 years ago was October the 2nd, 1915. First item. Car fire. Bishop's Waltham. On Thursday afternoon, a London gentleman, Mr. J. Grieve Lebrun, motored down to Netley Hospital to visit his son, invalided home from the front, having been wounded in the head and paralysed, and on returning home had a most unusual experience. On going up the hangars, he heard a noise, and on inspection found one of his brake rods had broken, and whilst giving this attention, the car suddenly burst into flames. The car, a valuable landaulette, was completely destroyed. The second item, great advance. London. This week has been one of the most historic of the war and may well mark a turning point in its fortunes. The Allies have made a brilliant advance, both in Champagne and Flanders, with great captures of men, guns and materials. The real importance of the move forward lies in the breaking of the enemy's line over a very wide front, to a depth in some places of between 2 and 3 miles. Second line defences have been carried, and practically everything won has been held.
Thank you, and it's me with 200 years, and I've got two unusual occurrences from October the 2nd, 1815. First one is headed House Burgled. Winchester. On Friday morning last, the house of T.P. Spencer Esquire was entered at the drawing room window by means of breaking a pane of glass, opening a fastener of the sash within, and then forcing the bar which goes across the shutters. A writing desk and workbox were taken from the room, both of which were found near the house in the morning, unlocked, but their contents untouched. The next one is a long trip. London. On Saturday, the 17th inst, at Yarmouth, a most extraordinary circumstance occurred. A countryman, wanting to cross the river, casually got into a boat, with an instant to convey himself over, but not knowing how to manage the boat. He drove to sea, and actually arrived at Calais on Tuesday following, from which place an account was received last Saturday of his being safe and well. And one other item that came into the historical section is headed "The Swing Riots Led to a Wave of Violence." And the Hampshire countryside was in such turmoil as agricultural workers went on the rampage that one landowner was forced to read the Riot Act. Provoked by low wages, the hatred of threshing machines, which were blamed for throwing men out of work, together with harsh and degrading methods of poor relief, a tide of violence swept through the county in the autumn of 1830. The swing riots were so serious that the army stationed in Southampton was ordered to remove the locks on 500 muskets and sent them to Portswood for safekeeping. According to the history books, Southampton had been thrown into a state of continual excitement by various and frequently exaggerated reports of outrages committed by incendiaries and acts of violence by assemblies of farm labourers in the neighbourhood. In the November of that year, a mob of 500 farm workers, many armed with bludgeons and hatchets, is reported to have gathered and smashed all the threshing machines in and around Fair Oak before marching to Southampton. As protesters marched through Moor Green and West End, they threatened local people and extorted money. At the country home of Dr. Godden Jones in Swathling, the men demanded if he had any threshing machines. Jones, a magistrate and a brave man, ordered them to disperse, and when they refused, he read the Riot Act. That was recalled by a history book. The crowd then went on to Portswood, home of Major General Gubbins, and smashed a threshing machine found on his farm. After that, they turned back and met Jones once more, who seized the ringleader, Abraham Childs, from Alsford. Next, the mob visited a farmer called Tribe, who was known to possess a threshing machine, but finding that he had prudently destroyed it himself, then they extorted 1 guinea, that's £1.05 in our money, from him, and went on towards Stoneham Park, the seat of John Fleming. The heir to the 18th century Southampton MP of the same time, Fleming was both a prominent Tory and a benevolent landowner who paid his labourers well. On hearing of the outbreak of violence, he had collected his men and led them out to meet the rioters, of whom he took 45 into custody. The swing riots had many immediate causes, but were overwhelmingly the result of the progressive impoverishment and dispossession of the English agricultural workforce over previous 50 years, leading up to 1830. In Parliament, Lord Carnarvon has said that the English labourer was reduced to a plight more abject than that of any race in Europe, with their employers no longer able to feed and employ them. The swing riots were derived from the name that was often appended to threatening letters sent to farmers, magistrates, parsons and others. The name was the fictitious Captain Swing, who was regarded as the mythical figurehead of the movement. And those were our weekly regular features. Thank you all for reading them. We'll take a look now at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. Right, on Saturday the 10th of October at 7:30, it's the Romsey Arry at... I'm going to start again, I'm so sorry. Saturday the 10th of October at 7:30 at Romsey Abbey, it's Voices for Hospices, Come and Sing. Tickets are £10 to sing or listen from Romsey Tourist Office. I'll give you a number, 01794 512 987. 01794 512 987. And then at the Theatre Royal Winchester from Monday the 12th to the 17th of October at 7:30, with matinees on Tuesday at 1:30 and on Saturday at 2:30, we have Terence Rattigan's wonderful play Flarepath, a wartime romance well worth going to see. The tickets are £20.50 to £25, and the box office number is 01962 840440. That's 01962 840440. And moving on to Winchester Cathedral and their lunchtime concerts. On the 13th of October, that's Tuesday the 13th of October at 1 p.m, there's a lunchtime concert performed by Roger Owens on piano. That's free, but there is a retiring collection. On Wednesday the 14th of October at 7:30, Magna Carta, the Winchester Connection, Dr. David Starkey. Again, Winchester Cathedral. Friends of Winchester Cathedral annual lecture. This is open to non-members. The annual lecture is followed by drinks, reception and book signing. And that's £15 for members and £18 for non-members. That number you need is 01962 857 275. 01962 857 275. And finally, in the Great Hall in Winchester, on Saturday the 17th of October, A Melody of Music. And it's the Mayor's charity event, and it includes wine and a light supper. That's in the Great Hall, 7 p.m, 17th of October. Tickets are £35. And that number to ring is 01962 840 500. 01962 840 500. And before we move on to the general news, here are the lighting up times, starting on Saturday the 3rd of October. The sun will set at 6:40 p.m. And on Wednesday the 7th of October, the sun will rise at 7:15 p.m. And the sun will set again at 6:31 p.m. I have this feeling now that we're going to get the autumn chill and the clocks are going to go back. But not yet, not yet. And so we move on to items of general news, and Claire is going to start it off. Thank you.
This is headed, Burglar Paying Back Biker's Cafe After Admitting Raids. A Winchester man has avoided jail after breaking into a not-for-profit cafe three times in a month, costing its owners nearly £30,000. Adam Clark of Chapel Fields Eastern admitted ransacking Loomis near West Meon, stealing hundreds of pounds in staff tips to pay off a drug debt, a court heard. The 29-year-old was given a 2-year suspended sentence after the judge heard how he met the owners to apologise and started work to repair his damage. Prosecutor Tom Horder told Winchester Crown Court how Clark broke into the Biker's Cafe on July 5th, 14th and 26th, using a bucket full of sand, breeze block and paving slab to smash windows. His crimes cost the not-for-profit cafe £28,352 in lost revenue, repairs and new security measures, the court heard. Clark was caught on the third burglary after a co-owner installed CCTV, which broadcast directly to his mobile phone. Mr. Horder said he broke into safes, forced entry into the stockroom, and stole a laptop containing the firm's accounts and stock information. The court heard William Bainborough and Paul Fullick revive the remote cafe last year after it went out of business, preventing what they said in a statement would have been the end of an era for customers. In a submission to the court, they said the thefts had damaged staff morale and threatened the firm's survival through winter. But they asked the judge to spare Clark jail after he wrote to Mr. Bainborough apologising. The three now have an affable relationship and are working together to improve the cafe, said Lance Whiteford, mitigating. Mr. Whiteford said Clark got into trouble with cocaine dealers but had been clean for 2 years. Previous offences for similar matters, they arise out of the same drug debt, he said. He didn't go to his dad and say, "Dad, I've got myself into this mess, can you help me out?" Because like many young people, he was too damn proud and too afraid to ask for help, so he carried out offences. But that didn't mean the problem went away. He knows that what he did was mean, was nasty, and has caused a lot of distress. Recorder Richard Powell handed down a 2-year suspended sentence with rehabilitation sessions and 160 hours unpaid work. He ordered Clark to pay £2,000 over the next year.
Bus firm boosts nightly services. Public transport in Winchester has received a big boost after Stagecoach announced a better evening service. Most buses after 7:30 p.m. were slashed earlier this year after the County Council cut subsidies. But Stagecoach have reintroduced some services and more are planned for the autumn, the Town Forum heard. The improved services will mainly be on the 3, 5 and the Spring routes that run to Kingsworthy and Weak Hairstock. They will operate on a commercial basis and receive no subsidy, so must attract enough customers to make them viable. Councillor Janet Berry, Labour Group leader, complained that Highcliffe and Winnell had been ignored. The last bus to Winnell is still at 9:05 p.m. and the last bus from town to Tesco is 3:15 p.m. when it is a 24-hour supermarket. The last bus to Highcliffe is 7:15 p.m. I would like the service to be more inclusive of all the town wards. Councillor Dominic Hiscock welcomed the beefed-up services as it would cut car commuting into Winchester. He said, "People will have to drive into Winchester to get the train. I hope many people will take this up." Town Forum Chairman Anne Weir said, "We should encourage an uptake to make these services viable." Among the changes are the Spring, Kingsworthy to the city centre, improved morning peak services with an extra bus at 7:38 p.m. Number 3, Hairstock Week City Centre, bus has been retimed through the day, extra bus at 8:10 p.m. Number 5, Badger Farm City Centre, extra bus at 8:05 p.m. From October the 25th, Stagecoach will reintroduce more early evening to routes 1, 3, 5 and the Spring. The Spring, extra hourly service Monday to Saturday from 7:35 to 9:35 p.m. and an extra 10:35 p.m. service from Thursday to Saturday only. Number 3, Hairstock Week City Centre, extra hourly service from Monday to Saturday from 8:10 p.m. to 10:10 p.m. Monday to Wednesday for 10:10 p.m. The Town Forum bus will provide services at 10:10 p.m., 11:15 p.m. and 12:15 a.m. Thursday to Saturday. Number 5, Badger Farm City Centre, extra half-hour service Monday to Saturday from 8:05 p.m. to 10:35 p.m. Monday to Wednesday, 10:35 p.m. The Town Forum 5A will provide services at 10:35 p.m. and 11:40 p.m. on Thursdays to Saturdays. Number 1, Winnall City Centre, extra hourly service at 8.05 and 9.05pm. Number 1, Stanmore City Centre, extra services Monday to Saturday at 7.35pm, 8.15pm, 9.15pm and 10.35pm. The Town Forum 5A bus will provide services at 10.35 and 11.40pm on Thursday to Saturday. From October the 25th, some of the Town Forum night buses will be retimed. Oh dear, excuse me.
Bless you.
Retimed by 5 minutes to give a better integrated late evening service. And the piece is illustrated by a picture of Winchester bus station with two buses in it.
I'm sure those services are going to be a great relief to a number of people, so a good thing to have.
Right, next item is headed Barbed Wire Used to Deter Elderly Cat. No, it's not the Berlin Wall, it's a Hampshire garden boundary. A householder erected the barbed wire, sharp studs and 3-inch anti-pigeon spikes to stop a 14-year-old cat using the wall. For years, Tigley would come out of an upstairs window, then drop down onto a tiled roof and then again onto the wall before jumping down to the ground at the house 2 doors down in Pantheon Road, Chalmers Ford. But Valerie Pollard has put up the wire to stop Tigley. Tigley's owner, Bear Upton, 46, said, "It's awful. Tigley got stuck in it and neighbours had to rescue him. The neighbour has put all the barbed wire just to stop Tigley out of spite. It prevents her living a normal, happy, free life. She says she put it up to stop Tigley damaging her car. I've complained to the RSPCA, but they say they cannot get involved because people are allowed to put up pet deterrent." Miss Pollard declined to discuss the issue.
I think we're going to dedicate this edition to cats and dogs.
Yes.
Provided us with a lot of interesting stories. Thank you, Claire.
This is a tiny tribute to football giant. He is arguably the world's greatest footballer to have laced a pair of boots, writes Michael Carr. But how did football legend and sporting icon Pelé react when he saw himself created in miniature by an Alsford sculptor? Well, the legend said he was touched when he saw Nick Joly's pieces of himself featured as he had never been seen before as a tiny figure. Nick Joly, who's 42, whose studio is in West Street, Alsford, was chosen as just one of 13 artists whose work will be displayed at the Halcyon Gallery in London at a special exhibition called Pelé, Art, Life, Football. The exhibition runs until October the 18th and celebrates the Brazil star's career, lifetime of achievements and 75th birthday. Nick's sculptures took 4 months of painstaking work and are entitled Dream Team, On the Summit, A Bright Spark, and The One and Only Ten. He researched everything there was to know about Pelé, not just on the pitch but off it, spoke to people who had met him and read books, websites and antique newspapers to form the ideas for his pieces. He had the chance to meet the legendary striker, whose full name is Edson Arantes do Nascimento, and talk through his artwork with him. Each piece represents something unique about the great footballer. For instance, On the Summit represents his rise to the top from humble beginnings. Nick said, "My work is about the small details. I wanted to create a portrait of him. It was about finding the lesser known things about the man, rather than just Pelé. And that was what I was concentrating on. Because ultimately, he is a man called Edson, born and raised in the Three Hearts favelas, and through sheer hard work, perseverance, determination and faith, he reached the top. When we met, he got my work and loved it and said thank you. He said, "You have made me think of things I have not thought about for a while." Pelé's career saw him lift the World Cup in 1958, 1962, and famously 1970 in Mexico. He was capped 91 times and scored an incredible 77 goals for Brazil.
Farmers Market moving to High Street. Winchester Farmers Market is moving to the High Street. The first market in the new location will be on Sunday, October the 11th, from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m, providing two additional shopping hours. The market, said to be the biggest in Britain, has been in Middlebrook Street and the Middlebrook Street car park since 1999. Alex Handford, its business manager, said the decision has been prompted by the recent closure of the Friars Gate car park, reducing the number of car parking places for our visiting customers. The move frees up Middlebrook Street car park for shoppers. The farmers will leave their vehicles at the Colebrook Street and Chesil Street car parks. The Hampshire Farmers Market at Winchester takes place twice a month on the second and last Sunday of each month. There will be an additional market in October when the Hampshire Farmers Market will be taking part in the Winchester Cathedral Harvest Festival on Saturday and Sunday, October the 3rd to the 4th, and the piece is illustrated by the Farmers Market in Middlebrook Street car park in Winchester, where it is absolutely packed.
Busy junctions to be upgraded. The worst bottleneck in Winchester District is set to be tackled by a huge improvement scheme. Highways England announced it will spend up to £100 million at Junction 9 at Winnell, where the M3 meets the A34 and the A272. Major upgrades include enhancing capacity on the M3 between Winchester and Southampton and on the M27 between Southampton and Fareham. The hard shoulders will be converted into a permanent running lane to provide additional capacity. It was unclear if this removal will have safety implications. A Highways England spokesman said it was too early to say exactly what was planned at Winnell, but in the past suggestions have included a flyover over the motorway for the A34 and tunnelling to separate the major flows that otherwise meet at the traffic lights. Delays at Winnell are beginning to rival those at the notorious Hockley lights back in the 1980s and early 1990s before the M3 was completed. Other works announced include work on the M27's Southampton junctions, up to £250 million, improved slip roads at Junction 10 and 11, that's Bar End and Compton, that's going to cost up to £25 million, similar work at Junctions 12 to 14 at Eastleigh, that, and once again up to £25 million, the M271 / A34 Redbridge roundabout upgrade, up to £25 million. Work to reduce delays at the A31 at Ringwood, up to £25 million. James Burns, portfolio holder for local economy at Winchester City Council, welcomed the news. He said, "The £100 million improvements are a good thing. Junction 9 is one of the worst intersections in the region, and it is something that has been complained about time and time again from local residents and businesses. This is a big boost. Getting into the district generally encourages people to live here, work here, and spend their money here." In total, Hampshire Roads will have up to £450 million invested over the next 5 years, according to the figures announced last week. The changes are among the £2.2 billion package outlined for the South East between now and 2021. Simon Jones, Regional Director at Highways England, said around 8.7 million people live and work in South East England, more than any other region, and our 932 miles of major roads are some of the busiest in Europe. It is vital that we continue to improve the existing road network as well, which is why we are investing over £200 million this year alone.
Police campaign to tackle slavery. An anti-slavery partnership has been launched to crack down on exploitation and people trafficking in Hampshire. Last year, police identified 40 victims of modern slavery, including 5 children, in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, and officers admit this is probably a small percentage of the number of people affected. Police and Crime Commissioner Simon Hayes understands that many people do not believe that such horrific crimes are committed in their communities, but has called on residents to spot the telltale signs. These include people being forced to work through threats, being controlled and dehumanised by employers, and having their passports and freedom of movement taken away. The Hampshire and Isle of Wight Modern Slavery Partnership, run in conjunction with Mr Hayes, Hampshire Constables Chief Constable Andy Marsh and Anti-Slavery Commissioner Kevin Hyland, has been launched. Mr Hayes said, "People don't know what to look for or where it might be happening, and people don't have confidence in reporting it. I think they don't believe that it happens, and it's a controversial issue. It can happen to people in nail bars, people in car washing places, people that aren't really happy with life, and people who have nowhere to live." A new website and social media campaign has been launched as part of the initiative, which focuses on trying to get the public to spot the signs of slavery. Worldwide, more than 35 million people are thought to be victims of slavery. The most common exploitation type for potential victims was sexual exploitation, and between 2009 and 2013, 42% of referrals were confirmed as victims. The actions of 30-year-old Southampton resident Zydrunas Zanivicius, I apologise for my pronunciation, were described as degrading after he was convicted of forced labour. In May, Southampton Crown Court heard that he forced the victim to work 15 hours a day delivering charity bags for £30 a week. Eventually, the man wasn't working hard enough, and Zanivicius dumped him at a train station with £40 cash. In 2013, this paper also reported how jail terms were handed out to John and William Connors, who admitted forcing labour charges following an investigation centred around a campsite in Hamble. Mr Hyland said, "We want to make sure we are doing the most we can by going for the big fish, but not forgetting the individual cases that we see." Chief Constable Andy Marsh said, "Today we are sending out a clear message to victims of serious, organised crime that support is available to them and they do not need to suffer in fear and silence. For information, visit modernslaverypartnership.org.uk.
A year later, no charges. Police have not issued a single fixed penalty notice in Winchester city centre since the introduction of a 20-mile-an-hour speed limit over a year ago. Figures obtained by the Chronicle show no drivers have been prosecuted for speeding in the city centre since the restriction was brought in last August. It casts further doubt on the £90,000 project, which was questioned last year after police told a council meeting that they would not enforce the limit. Winchester City Council's then Transport Chief, Councillor Mike Southgate, branded the scheme pointless. At the time, police staff told councillors that the city centre would instead be monitored by volunteer speed watch groups. the reduction from 30 miles an hour was designed to cut carbon emissions and encourage more people to walk or cycle to work. Meanwhile, Hampshire civic chiefs are considering extending 20-mile-an-hour zones to villages such as Mitchell Deaver, despite warnings from Winchester's current transport portfolio holder, Councillor Ernie Jeffs, that limits would create an enforcement problem. And the piece is illustrated by a 20-mile-an-hour sign introduced in August 2014.
Moon puts on super show. Stargazers in Hampshire join the country in seeing blood-red supermoon above Britain for the first time in 30 years. The eerie light created from a lunar eclipse with the moon near to its closest point to the Earth delighted amateur astronomers and photographers while filling others with dread. And there's a photograph here which was taken by Rosie Bailey, 17, of High Street, Twyford. She said it was spectacular to watch from beginning to end. The spectacle unfolded from 1:10 a.m. with the total phase, when the moon is completely in shadow, lasting from 3:11 a.m. to 4:24 a.m. It was to go on until the moon emerged from the Earth's shadow at 6:24 p.m. When the moon is at its perigee, its shortest distance from the Earth, it is 226,000 miles away and appears 14% larger and 30% brighter than usual. The last time this coincided with a lunar eclipse was when the moon was covered by the Earth's shadow. It was in 1982, and the event will not be repeated until 2033. Through the ages, so-called blood moons have been viewed as ill omens by superstitious people.
Oh dear.
Christmas Lights Switch On to be aired on TV. The Christmas Lights Switch On in Winchester this year will be broadcast to millions of homes across the UK on The One Show. The host of the show, which is broadcast on BBC One, Matt Baker, will do the honours on Tuesday, November the 10th. Christmas in Winchester has become a huge commercial success over the last 5 years, as thousands of people flock to the city centre to enjoy the famous Christmas market and ice rink at the cathedral. Coachloads of tourists arrive in the city, bringing a big boost to shops, restaurants and hotels. The One Show coming to the city comes after Winchester was featured in a food documentary by Terry Wogan, which saw him doing a culinary tour as part of Terry and Mason's Great Food Trip.
Goodness me, Winchester is in the spotlight.
How about that?
That's amazing. And I think the crowds will gather even more because Matt Baker is coming to Winchester. Can we have your next piece, please, Robin?
Yes. Trust fails to hit 95% A&E target. Frustrating. That was the verdict from the chief executive of a trust which runs Winchester Hospital on the continuing failure to meet targets for its accident and emergency waiting times. Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust failed to hit a target, ensuring 95% of patients spend fewer than 4 hours in A&E. Failure usually triggers intervention from Health Watchdog Monitor. In January, the Chronicle revealed patients were being seen in corridors and the Trust faced allegations that the recording of waiting times was not being accurately done. Despite initiatives, including extra beds, the Trust has failed again with 92% of patients spending fewer than 4 hours in A&E. Mary Edwards, chief executive, defended the trust, saying it was reducing the number of agency staff it uses. She said the wait is very frustrating for people who come to A&E but are not life-threatening cases.
New home for Model City. Progress is being made in finding a permanent home for a large model of Victorian Winchester, the town forum has heard. Civic chiefs are working up plans for the model of the city in 1870 to go on display. Roger Brown, a former chief planning officer at Hampshire County Council, who took years creating the model, died earlier this year, frustrated that his work was only seen occasionally. Eloise Appleby, assistant director for the City Council, told the forum last Wednesday that one possible home could be the Tourist Information Centre at the Guild Hall. Another was an unspecified location being looked at by the Hampshire Cultural Trust, which now runs several museums across the county, including the City Museum in the Square. Ms Appleby said the likely cost would be around £50,000, which would include minor repairs and enhancement with lighting and sound. Councillor Fiona Mather said it was a shame if he could not find a home in the City Museum, which have already had several models of the city, but none that cover Victorian times.
And thank you very much, everyone. And that concludes the Hampshire Chronicle extracts from this week. Now, you will have noticed that a number of our items were giggle-prompting items, and I hope that that didn't mar your enjoyment of this edition of the Hampshire Chronicle this week. And they're all still having a good time. I just want to give you another reminder that Irene Dowding is the person to call if you have any problems. And her number again is 01962870370. And we'd like to thank the copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And, of course, many thanks to our readers, Claire.
Bye.
Robin.
Bye.
Peter.
Goodbye.
And thank you for stepping in to help us with Jerry's absence this week.
That's quite all right, Mr. Lydiard.
And from me, Roz, goodbye. Would you please put the memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. And we do wish you a very good week. Goodbye.